diagnosed with cancer has a huge impact on people's lives, so it's no surprise that sufferers are more likely than the general population to develop major clinical depression. Until now, however, we haven't known just how likely it is and whether the type of cancer has an effect. In a series of three papers published this week in The Lancet, Michael Sharp from Oxford University investigated this issue and looked at whether interventions could improve depressive symptoms. He joins us now. Hi, Michael.
Hello there.
So how common is depression alongside cancer?
Well, first of all, we have to be clear what we mean by depression and that words used very imprecisely. If we're talking about sadness or general distress, of course, it's a very high rate. But here we're focusing on, as you say, clinical depression, depression that is debilitating, that a psychiatrist would say needs treatment. And if we focus on that, we find that it varies with the type of cancer. So some cancers like lung cancer, it's about 13% of patients, and it goes down slightly in rate through breast, colorectal, and in the genitourinary cancers like prostate cancer, it's about 5%. But if we are talking about a population point prevalence of about 2%, as you can see, all those cancer types have elevated rates of major depression.
And do we know what's different about the different kinds of cancer that might mean you're more likely to get depression if you've got one type?
That's a very good question. I mean, the obvious one is that lung cancer, as people may know, is one of the cancers that we haven't made much progress in cancer treatments. So the life expectancy for lung cancer is poor. Only about 13% of patients live more than 5 years. So clearly, if insofar as the depression is determined by the awfulness of your cancer, it's perhaps not surprising that lung cancer has a higher rate. Of course, there may be other biological mechanisms as well that we don't well understand.
And yet, not everyone with lung cancer will develop depression. So do we know what other factors make it more likely that you will go on to have depression?
Yes. In our analysis here, we found that depression was more likely in younger patients, in female patients, and in people living in areas which are regarded as having higher social deprivation. We didn't measure it in this study, but other studies have found, perhaps not surprisingly, a previous history of depression, a marker of a vulnerability, if you like, also makes you more likely to become depressed.
Now, some of those things are markers for depression on their own. Living in poorer areas and that sort of thing we know makes you more likely to get depression. So is there a kind of interaction going on there?
Yes, I think that's right. It would be surprising if the risk factors for depression with cancer were completely different from those for the risk factors for depression in general. And of course, as you say, many of those are similar. But clearly with cancer, we've moved the prevalence rates up two or three times from the general population. So the whole thing about having cancer is adding something to those risk factors.
Now, you are also looking at treatments and how you might be able to help these people. What kind of treatments are currently on offer alongside the kind of traditional cancer treatments to help people mentally?
Well, the standard treatments that, of course, any of us would get for depression would include seeing your GP, who might prescribe an antidepressant drug, seeing a counsellor or a psychologist who might give you some psychological treatment. And people with cancer have those kind of treatments available to them. But what we found is that despite that availability, 75%, and I'll just say that again, 75% of patients with major depression in our study were not receiving what we deemed an adequate treatment.
That's shocking. What can we do to lower that percentage?
So I think it's important. It's a complex situation, and there are many reasons why effective treatment doesn't happen. So what we've done is built an intervention, a package, if you like, which tries to address the main problems that prevent people getting treatment. So there's, first of all, identifying who's depressed. There's educating the patient what depression is. There's making sure they get treatment. And we've offered patients both antidepressants and psychological treatment. And I think most importantly, we've integrated the treatment of depression with their cancer care. So they don't have to become a mental health patient. They don't have to go to a different service or a different trust. It's part of their cancer treatment.
So I imagine that makes it logistically easier for the patient, but also somehow alleviates some of the perhaps stigma around getting treated for depression.
I think that's both those things are absolutely right. And I think it's very important to be aware we had to, this treatment, the most of the face-to-face contact was done by cancer nurses, and they had to spend quite a lot of time with the patients, helping them understand what depression was and that depression could be treated and how it could be treated. And so that, if you just tell people are depressed and ask them to go off and do things, most of them don't.
And how effective was your new integrated method of treatment?
So, you know, just following on this conversation then, so we've said that that all these things are available to people. And what we found, a perhaps most surprising finding, is if you tell the patient they've got depression and you tell their doctors they've got depression and you encourage everybody to do something about it, the outcome is really very poor. So 6 months after that, only 17% of patients having usual care have a major improvement in their depression. And with our integrated package, which, you know, there's no wonder treatments in here, it's taking all the treatments we know about but packaging them effectively, that goes right up to 62%.
That's a big jump. Does it work just as well for all the types of cancer you looked at?
Yes, if you look at a subgroup analysis, none of the factors such as gender, age or cancer type have any major effect on the treatment size. That's right.
And how long do you think this will be before it's rolled out to all cancer patients?
Well, implementation is always a challenge in medical research. We have the phenomena, it's referred to in the States, of bench to bookshelf, and a lot of findings just stay in a journal. I am hopeful that the findings here, the treatment size is so large, the cost of a treatment is relatively modest in a cancer context, about £600, that we will start to see implementation. And we are in discussion with some cancer centres, both in the UK and in the United States.
Great news. Thanks for that, Michael. Michael Sharp from Oxford University.